This is Helen Sumter for Audio Arts. I'm here in the studio with the artist Lally Chetwynd, whose work includes painting and sculpture, but it's predominantly based around theatrical collaborative performances that reenact and reinterpret characters and events from popular cultural history. And these can include music videos, scenes from Hollywood movies and famous artworks. I'd like to ask you first of all if you could talk about the ideas behind the performance that you staged for the opening of this year's New Contemporaries exhibition in Liverpool. We had performing poodles, we had Meatloaf's rock ballad Bat Out of Hell, and also an erotic print involving an octopus by the 19th century Japanese artist Hokusai. I was wondering if you can talk about how all those elements came together.
Yeah, totally. I wanted to collage something. It didn't occur to me that the subject that I chose was bad taste until I actually asked people what they thought of Meatloaf, and the reaction slightly disturbed me, how he seemed to just epitomise what people thought of as bad taste. So that was already good territory, I thought. I was onto something there. And then I came across, really interestingly, an image by Hokusai that's of a woman being made love to by two octopuses, and they're pink, and bizarrely their heads actually look rather like Homer Simpson because they've got big bulging eyes and sort of slick, bald heads. And she's in sort of raptures of ecstasy. It just seemed to begin to present a subject that I was looking at, Meatloaf and a Bat Out of Hell. So suddenly bestiality in some way began to come together as a sort of theme. And then after that, I was researching the Roman Empire, and Emperor Nero became a key figure because, again, a bit like Meatloaf, he's really seemed to be the epitome of sort of people's idea of horror. And I don't find that the case. And that really scared me, that I seem to find Nero someone quite inspiring and everyone else thinks of him as the person who killed all the Christians. When I think of Nero, I think of someone who tried to promote the arts, making the arts more respectable. And I don't know really how to put it, because we take it for granted now that the arts are something that's worth discussing. But I think, as far as I can understand, in Roman culture, they weren't at all. And the fact that Nero, who was the emperor, actually performed and dressed up as a beast and have a sexual romp performed where he'd have some of his servants and they'd pretend to be tied to stakes, and then he'd escape out of a cage and run up to them and play with their genitals and become sexually excited, and then his favourite slave called Doryphorus would come in and dispatch him. Nero was penetrated, which is, again, a complete crime in the Roman world. It's amazing that the emperor was crossing these boundaries in a public way. It's really, I think, amazing. But everyone I talk to thinks of Nero as obviously actually appalling. But I think he's interesting. The next thing that came along with this theme of bestiality was, for no real reason, some poodles. They had a flaming loop, which I'm probably saying wrong, but that's how it came into my head. But it's flaming hoop, probably. But it's a flaming loop in this performance anyway. But it's the idea of, if you could get through the transition of stepping through this doorway, as it were, like a rite of passage, it takes a lot of bravery and courage. But at the same time, by presenting it with two people dressed as poodles and really not doing it very gracefully, but actually just managing to stagger through the loop, it became something quite funny as well. That's all the ideas behind the themes. I don't really know how necessarily they link together, but they do to me somehow.
And when you come to put the performance together, then you've got these kind of ideas going, how do you actually put that into a performance?
I get really, really excited about the ideas. Nothing matters, almost, that if it feels impossible that I have to make an octopus that's the size of a car, or that I have to make some ginormous fruit bat headdresses. I just get so excited about it being a reality. I literally sort of throw myself into it and they appear to some extent. I try to be as practical as possible. You know, I make drawings and then execute them afterwards, and I have to plan my hours and everything. But the how it becomes reality is just because I'm just so excited about it. I just get swept along.
And how can it have been tightly scripted as the actual performance itself? I mean, you work with a team of, I mean, if they're friends or collaborators, or how you'd like to describe them, who
the muses
who are wearing the costumes that you make for these performances. I mean, what kind of input do they have into what goes on the actual event?
They have a lot of input, definitely. So the whole quality almost is that it's improvised, so that the people I invite to take part in the performance are as key elements as I am almost. Really what I should be talking about here is the idea of the casting is really important. It's like really integral to the performances, because that they're amateurs, as it were. The quality that they bring is that they're kind of terrified about what they're going to do. I have to explain that we don't really do rehearsals. We do maybe one run-through or one dress rehearsal. But going back to the casting, that's a really important point, is that in my experience, I've asked people to do things and I've spotted them amongst my friends, as it were, someone I've sat next to and had lunches with for years. I'll suddenly look at them again from the corner of my eye and think, they would make the most amazing, I don't know, Hulk or Poodle. It's a lot of that sort of strange instinct to ask them, and in many ways you could be insulting them by saying, would you like to be the Hulk? But somehow, in fact, it's been this really nice thing that they've always wanted all their life to play that role, and then suddenly it can come into being. It's a really intuitive process.
I also wanted to ask you how important the venue was to your performances. Because obviously it's a different venue each time. Another recent performance was a reenactment of the death of the conservationist Joy Adamson, of the Born Free fame, and that was part of the opening exhibition of the refurbished Gasworks Gallery in South East London.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of people at that venue, and it kind of got kind of very packed. I was wondering how much you think about the audience's kind of role in that when you're deciding what piece to put on a venue, if you're asked to come to a specific place.
It's a really important issue for me, is that exactly how the audience is meant to be involved in the performance is totally... I don't want to distance the audience's involvement from the performance. This rules out any sort of traditional theatre architecture, because I want it to be that it's in keeping with Brecht's Theatre in the Round, or the circus is another really good example, and carnival's a really good example. Literally, by turning up, the audience should actually be as much part of it. It's sort of in keeping with the mob in Rome or something, the idea that the audience becomes an organic organism. The whole idea is to be included, that the audience are meant to feel included and excited by what they're seeing and being involved in, and that they recognise their involvement.
We've talked about the kind of the amateur kind of feel of your performances, and there's also kind of a carnal feel as well. Is that something that you deliberately kind of want to create, that kind of atmosphere?
Yes, definitely. Carnival is something I feel passionately about. That quality of letting go and rejecting normality is definitely really important. That's the quality I'm trying to present in the performances. And I think there was one phrase was that I came up with through watching Marx Brothers films, but it was the idea that you could bottle mayhem and have that as a sort of a product almost, somehow. The other person that I sort of related to who seemed to have this ability is Ed Wood, and he makes films that quite obviously don't live up to professional standards, but they're really incredibly innovative. He does split screen presentations and he edits in found footage, but he's another example really of, I guess, what would be seen to be amateurish and bad, but in fact what I think of as a really unusual quality that's standing outside of normality and professionalism.
Now, though the performances are the main kind of element of your work, or perhaps the part of your work that people will be most familiar with, but you also make paintings and do collages. Can you talk a bit about that side of your work as well?
Sure. I just finished an MA in painting at the Royal College. Quite consistently, I seem to paint fruit bats and bats, and they are at the moment in very romantic settings, and they're in a series of about six, and they're very small. They must be 15 centimetres by 20 centimetres each. The narrative is always a melodrama of some sort of epic proportion, and the bats are seen to be heroes within this, but they're quite ambiguously maybe anti-heroes. They're meant to be humorous, but the way that I deal with humour is that it comes naturally to me. I have seemed to have a sense of fun that's stronger than any other sense I have. People have asked me about using humour as if it were an oil paint. It seems that I can't help but make things somehow, hopefully, shouldn't trigger you into laughing. Yeah, it's really definitely a quality of everything I do, it seems.